Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Fansmanship Podcast. Today's podcast is a special one for a few reasons, but mainly because it's the final podcast that I'm doing with Tom Barquette, voice of Cal Poly Radio, for the past, 10 plus years, just about a decade that he's been doing Cal Poly games, and he's retiring from Cal Poly play-by-play at the end of this basketball season. And so this is the final like in-person interview I'm probably going to be doing with him while he's Cal Poly's play-by-play guy. Tom's always been somebody who's been gracious and kind to me in the 5+ years of that we've been doing fansmanship. Tom has always been just generous with his time and a really good guy. He's always, like I said, been kind to me, so I really appreciate him. He's definitely somebody who will be missed on press row at Cal Poly games, and we wish him the best of luck. But I wanted to catch up with him one more time. We talked about some of his favorite players and coaches that he's covered. We talked about a number of different topics related to college sports. I hope you enjoy it. It's Tom Barquette, probably for the final time, at least as Cal Poly play-by-play man on the Fansmanship.com podcast. Ready? Here with Tom Barquette on the Fansmanship podcast. Maybe our last hurrah in terms of doing a podcast with you while you are, you know, the Cal Poly play-by-play guy. You'll be retiring, you announced, at the end of this upcoming basketball season. And certainly I was sad to hear the news, and a lot of other people were. But excited to have you on today, talk a little bit of Big West hoops, and maybe go down memory lane a little bit.
Yeah, always happy to do that. I mean, whichever direction you want to go, Owen, I'm there, because you say my time's limited, and I'm happy to talk about whatever you feels good on the table.
It's not like you're dying, though. Your time's limited. You said your time's limited, like right. your hoops time.
No, I'm 100% healthy. I'm good.
Don't say it like that, Tom. You know, this year, obviously, we'll talk about this year, and then we'll kind of get into maybe some historionics or something like that. But you've been doing this for how long now?
10 years. Almost 11, yeah.
So a full decade, and you've been doing all three sports for most of that time.
Well, I did baseball for the first 2 years, and then I've done football, basketball, and baseball together. This would be season number 9 for that. Okay. So just almost 11 years total.
Yeah, which is amazing. And in those 11 years, I was talking with Gazal a second ago, you know, Cal Poly's had a lot of milestones that they've hit. They've hosted NCAA baseball regional for the first time. You got to be in that. They went to the NCAA tournament for the first time in basketball. You were there. They went to the playoffs a couple of times. Games at Montana, football games at Montana that they've won. I mean, what's been kind of the most memorable one for you over the past decade or so?
Oh, it's not close. It's winning the Big West tournament for the basketball team. That would be my career lifetime broadcast a highlight. Winning against Texas Southern was fun, and it was cool and all that other stuff, but winning the Big West tournament, those were the three best broadcasting days of my life, because who expected it? Right. I mean, I'm sure the team believed it to some degree, and Joe knew that he had it within his team. I mean, but when you're going into that thing to where you're the seventh seed.
You're playing the noon game. I was at lunch at Spikes in San Luis, like just trying to stay for long enough to see if they would have a chance, and by the time I left, they're up 30 and Santa Barbara's broken.
Yeah, well, and actually the inside joke with Eric Burdick for that day, you mentioned the noon game. Right. I had said I should be there probably around the fourth or fifth inning to take over the baseball broadcast, which was going on that night. And while I didn't believe that fully, because I knew what Joe was capable of as a head coach. Right. I've seen it, and I believe in him thoroughly. Right. But I didn't think we would do it in that fashion. Right. But you combine that, you know, with beating Irvine the next day and taking it right to Mamadou Njai and then hanging on. You know, Shipley hitting the three and Zach Gordon taking the charge. Yeah. You put those 3 days together, Owen, and that was the pinnacle for me. It hasn't gotten any better since, and it wasn't any better before then. Okay. I joked with Joe when I told him, when I called him on the phone and told him I was leaving at the end of basketball season. I said, now you realize you have to go to the tournament. He goes, that's our incentive for the team. I go, yeah, right. But it would be nice. It'd be fun.
It'd be pretty awesome. And this season's actually shaping up not unlike that year 2 years ago. I mean, this team's had a hard time in the Big West regular season kind of getting their footing the last 3 years, really since the Drake UU, Dylan Royer, Chris O'Brien triumvirate as seniors, their senior year. Cal Poly hasn't really had a winning regular season in the Big West, although the NCAA tournament certainly makes everybody forget about that 2 years ago. Would have to win every game to get 500 this current year. But what do you see about this team this year maybe that that makes you like optimistic? I mean, it's hard to say that like reasonably and with a straight face, like, oh yeah, they kind of got them right where they want them. But what about this team? What about this team like makes you optimistic that they have something like that in them again?
Well, the one thing, and usually in mid-majors, you know, senior leadership is everything. Senior play is everything in mid-majors. I mean, Chris Eversley, Kyle Ottister, and Jamal Johnson proved that to a T
right.
In 2014. Right. I mean, those three, they carried, and everybody just went right along with them because Chris Eversley was so engaging, Kyle Ottister was so dynamic, and Jamal Johnson was such a stoic leader and tenacious with his team in and off the court.
Yeah.
But for this team, I'm optimistic because of a freshman. I think if Jalen Shedd continues to improve and if he continues to make leaps and bounds like I think he can and like the team thinks he can, I'm telling you, Owen, I think that young man can do a lot of things for this basketball team. If it's not this year, it's going to be fairly soon. And David Nwaba, he's changed over the last couple of weeks in terms of his court demeanor. Not scoring points, not getting rebounds. He's not as whiny. He's not as complainy.
Yeah.
And I talked to Joe about that. And he said, "No, we've done a few things to help him along." And
one thing that's helping him is not having to play point guard the whole time, or not having to play point guard heavy minutes, being able to crash the offensive glass. He talked about it after the last game that, you know, Jalen's presence allows Dave to be on the wing and on the baseline a lot more, and that's really Dave's wheelhouse.
Yeah, it is. When he could do those kinds of things, but for me, Owen, when he keeps his attitude in check, when he keeps his his distress or his stress or his ability to not agree with the officials, when he keeps that in check, he's a different ball player and it's a different team. Yeah. And then the other part is, if Joel Awich continues to block shots, this team will get better. Right. I've said this over, when he blocks shots, this is a better basketball team.
Right.
He's a pretty good shooter.
Yeah.
He's good in the paint. He can get rebounds. He leaps. But when he blocks shots, this team's better. So if you go with Jalen Shedd, David with a better mindset,
right.
And Joel doing his pogo stick routine,
right.
You know, I think they got a shot. I don't rule anything out with the Joe
right.
Pollaro team.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that's the thing, like, you have to say I don't rule anything out, but then, like, you start to, like, I think I can talk myself into a scenario where they kind of catch some teams kind of like they did a few years ago, and where they just get better, as Joe kind of said at the beginning of conference play when they were losing all these close games, get a little bit better in a few different areas, and these close losses are wins. You know, they've done it on the road and at home where they've had these close losses, and, you know, a couple guys making a couple shots or making a few more defensive plays, and, you know, maybe one, you know, they're like one bonehead defensive play away from having beaten Irvine. They're, you know, they're probably only the Hawaii game at home was the game that they were out of. And so, again, I'm very optimistic about this whole thing. I want to go back about football really quick,
mm-hmm.
too. So, like, what would you say, like, the best football game that you called while you were here was?
Wow, the best football game. The one that stands out just because of points, I've got to go back to when Ramses Barden was here and Ryan Mole and James Noble and Jonathan Daly. I mean, those
Wisconsin.
Guys. Yeah, those guys were fantastic. That game stands out just because of the result. I mean, it was there for the taking. They had it. They score on the first play of overtime. And God love Andrew Gardner. I had many conversations with him before that game and just a handful after. I did talk to him afterwards. It was a painful conversation just because of the emotions that he went through. And his mom and dad, I'm telling you, nobody realized that. But his dad, after that game, I saw him after, and oh, boy, you talk about my heart falling. I can't imagine what his felt like. But that was a fun game. And that kind of environment, you know, it was 25, 30 degrees, whatever it was. And also a Southern Utah game that year from the old coach, Rich Ellerson. It elicited one of the great responses I've ever heard from a coach in the post game. They were leading Southern Utah 38-35 at halftime. Mm-hmm. And Rich said after the game, he goes, "It's the only game in my lifetime as a player, as an assistant coach, as a coordinator, as a head coach that I've allowed 35 points at halftime and been ahead." You know, that was the kind of team that they had, right. You know, with Dally and Barden and Mole and James Noble and Trudell Tolver, all those guys. I mean, they scored 40 on accident.
Right.
And so the Wisconsin would be the more memorable game. But actually, last year's team, you know, when they could run on anybody, mm-hmm. I mean, people would rule them out. We just couldn't stop anybody.
Right.
I mean, it was just – and Tim and I talked about this frequently.
And they'd fumble.
Yeah, but that was just two games.
Right.
Two games in, like, 5 years. They didn't fumble. Was it the previous year? They fumbled like nine times all season.
Seven, right?
So, yeah, but ridiculous. And then they fumbled seven in one game, and three got returned for scores.
15 or 20 in 3 or 4 weeks. It was crazy.
And another one got returned to the 10-yard line in the Southern Utah game.
Right.
But then they scored five touchdowns on a team that hadn't given up a score in four Big Sky games.
Right.
So I loved that team last year. I just wish they could have stopped somebody.
Yeah. Likewise, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, next year with the return of the defensive line coach and kind of how that's shaping up too.
You didn't really deal, even though you did three sports, you didn't really deal with that many total coaches. There wasn't a ton of, there was maybe one coaching turnover in basketball and one in football. And that would be it. Aside from Joe Calero, who's hosting you at a banquet this upcoming Sunday, I think, right? Friday night. Sorry, I knew it was one of the in between nights. So Friday night will be the basketball banquet. I think the public's welcome if you guys want to come.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be the guest of honor. That'll be a little. I know you a little bit, and I feel like that's going to be a little bit awkward for you to think about. Yeah.
It's a little unnecessary, but you know, I love Joe for a lot of things, and I appreciate what he's doing and that he's just taking a moment to recognize me. And it's not going to be a big thing. I mean, they might say a few words here and there, and they'll allow me to say something. You know, but overall, I'm just a radio guy. I mean, I just do what I do, and I don't take my job that seriously. I never have, and I say that in this way, Owen, that when someone turns on the broadcast, outside of my wife and daughters and a few of my siblings, nobody turns that thing on to listen to me. They don't. Honestly, I mean, I know I can enhance the experience.
I think unless you're Bill Walton, that's the case for a lot of guys. I'd say that's the case for most. I would turn it on to listen to Bill. I don't know how you feel about Bill.
Yeah, you're going polar opposite though with Bill. But I mean,
I know. But I'm just saying, I say that in general about play-by-play or color commentators. Maybe Al Michaels, maybe Bill Walton. Like those are the two maybe that I might turn on to watch.
Well, Vince Scully's the other one.
Okay,
I will go out of my way. My daughters can forget their music in the car, whatever else. When Scully's doing a game, I'm in. I don't care if he's 110 years old right now. I'm going to listen.
For sure.
He's just fantastic. For sure. And for me, I just go, no one tunes it in for me. They tune it in to listen to the players, to listen to Cal Poly. I mean, I could be a chimp on the air, and they would still tune in. Now, I know I can enhance the experience with some entertainment and things like that. I understand that. And I do that because I love what I do, but you know, for Joe to do what he's doing, I appreciate it.
So aside from Joe, then, who's been like an entertaining coach that you've covered throughout your time here?
Well, I mean, I loved Rich. He's one of the best guys I've ever worked with in any sport, any time, because we were friends. Rich is the only coach that's ever invited me into his home, mm-hmm. just to come over and have some dinner, and I always appreciated him doing that. We had a connection. And Tim is the same way. Tim is very candid, very honest.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. He tells me a lot of things off microphone that I can't use on the air.
But they give you background for just general things and give you context.
Absolutely. And Tim, his candor, even on microphone. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we do a pregame interview, when I ask him about a game plan, he's totally cognizant that this interview is going to be played about 15 minutes prior to kickoff. Who on earth is going to get anything out of that? So he put some pretty good stuff out there, mm-hmm. and I've always appreciated him for that. Larry Lee, I will miss Larry, not because of what he said on air, but what he says off air. That dude is funny.
Mm-hmm.
Larry is funny, funny, funny. In his baseball history and the trivia stuff that we had on the bus rides with Eric Burdick and whatever his assistant coaches are at the time, was one of the highlights of my 11 seasons. I mean, I love doing that. And Larry knows baseball history as well as anybody I know.
Well, Larry is baseball and San Luis Obispo too, and as somebody who's from around here, you can really appreciate that in terms of being the Central Coast guy who's had success and been able to hang around here and at Cal Poly, and really, if you talk about Cal Poly baseball, you know, the Lee family.
Yeah, I mean, Larry knows more people, and more people know Larry probably than any one individual in this county, and I don't think I'm stretching it.
No,
I'm you know, right. By saying that, I mean, from his dad, Tom, who was here, who provided one of the best moments that I've seen at Bagot Stadium with his father when in the last few weeks of his life. But Larry's just been fantastic to work with. I'll miss that as much as anything now that I'm not doing baseball. And there's certain things I won't miss about baseball, but the sport in general is beautiful. Working with Larry and his staff has been great, and I'll miss Larry as part of this.
Yeah, for sure. Talk to me about the favorite athlete that you've interviewed or talked to. You've seen a lot of them come through, and you know, some of them have been really great, like Ramsey's and other guys, Chris Eversley. But you know, who's somebody who might be sneaky in terms of interaction or humor, or somebody as an athlete who you'll say, oh man, that was a good guy to interact with?
David Hanson. I mean, I don't need an extra second to think about that. The nicest guy that I've dealt with in my time here. You always got a good hello from David after a win, after a loss in the hotel lobby. David, you felt like he liked you. I mean, you really did. I mean, David was, and he's one of, I think it was 11 siblings, I think, for David. You know, his brother was here, Matt, before him, and then David came along. He went through two coaches. He was at the tail end of Kevin Bromley. But I love David, and I saw someone, we played Pitt 2 years ago. He was on their staff, and I believe he still is. Mm-hmm. But David is, he's at the top. You mentioned Chris Eversley. He's the most engaging.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
most dynamic one I've interviewed, really.
Chris would engage everybody in the room. He was a big reason, I think, when we talk about going to the tournament in 2014.
Yeah.
He was a big reason. I mean,
that's the so when I talk myself into it, when I talk myself into this team winning three games in a row, I say, oh, man, but who's going to be the Chris Eversley? Who's going to be right there all the time? I think you have, you know, 10 guys who are really good and who are, you know, really good players and good enough to play and dominate portions of games at any time even. You know, when you talk about all 10 of those guys can do certain things on the court that are great for periods of time. But who's going to be that guy to, like, look you in the eyes and be, you know, he's just so engaging on and off the court. When he was talking, you know, you talk about Hanson when he's talking to you. To me, you know, CE at a press conference, I think it was after the UCSB game that was here.
Yeah.
I wish I had a tape of it. You know, he said, what are we going to take our jerseys off and give them up? Are we going to quit? Are we going to go home? No. You know, he was like, he was very much like steadfast, not in a rude way, but just like, we're going to keep battling until this jersey gets ripped off our backs. And, you know, he really truly believed that and could articulate it in a way that was different than any other athlete I've interviewed here in the last 4 or 5 years.
You want to say that Chris Eversley got it, but I don't think that's part of it. It's just who he was.
Right. Yeah, right. It wasn't that he got it. It was just that was his personality.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't, you know, a shtick or that I've got to put on this leadership role.
No, right.
You know, it just, that's what he, if he said it up there, he meant it and he felt it. And he wanted his teammates to feel it because that's where he was coming from.
Yeah.
And that's why I use the word engaging with him. I mean, he would engage me in the hotel lobby. Come up, he wanted to know how I was doing or what I was doing that day. I'm like, I'm just kind of hanging around, Chris. I'm doing fine. But I mean, that's just. I mean, is there anyone like that now? When you kind of make that comparison, yeah, I'm not sure.
Owen. I don't know.
He's
nobody's proven it yet. And maybe I didn't know that about him at the time. Honestly, like maybe I didn't know that. You know, at the time until I kind of reflect on it, and you have a few years, and you say, man, that was a dude.
Yeah.
Like, and I think in basketball, sometimes you got to have a dude. Yeah, I mean, so what I want to talk about the Big West in general this year, because we are coming up on the tournament. You've seen every team, some of them twice. Tell me about, like, what's your read? I think it's, you know, Hawaii and Irvine and everybody else in terms of, like, the regular season. But neither Hawaii or Irvine, I mean, Hawaii maybe more than Irvine, but neither team has kind of shown me that they're unbeatable. I mean, I think both of them are beatable by a team that could be in the sixth seed like Cal Poly or any other of the, you know, couple teams that are tied for six right now.
You know, I would agree with that at about 99%.
Right.
The 1%, I would like to see Cal Poly finish fifth in the Big West.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see them avoid Hawaii, Irvine, or Long Beach State in the first round. I still think they can beat them. I think they can beat them. Yeah. But I really would like to see him having to not play that game in the first round. Get him in the second round. That would be my preference. I know Joe and his team, they don't care. And they'll say that until the cow comes.
And 2 years ago, theoretically, they beat the 2 seed in the first round. Yeah. UCSB didn't seem beatable, really, for them.
But based on what I've seen, I wouldn't want to play Irvine in the first round. I mean, I know Luke Nelson can shoot, and if that guy gets hot, forget it. Yeah. And Mamadou's a different player this year than he was 2 years ago. Clearly, he's got 2 years of maturity and experience. Yeah. I mean, you saw the defense that he played here. I mean, he was blocking shots. I didn't even think he could remotely get close to it.
He blocked a three-pointer from the top of the key, and I think he was standing on the free throw line.
Yeah, yeah. And then
dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, and he blocks shots with his belly button, if he has to, when he's in the paint.
I took a really fun picture of Jalen dribbling, trying to dribble around him, and Mamadou's hand is, like, brushing up against Jalen's head and is about the same size as his, like, head and face and maybe his neck, too.
Yeah,
I couldn't really tell.
I tweeted that thing. It was fantastic.
It's weird. Sure. Just, like, I mean, just crazy. For people who don't know, like, what's it like to be a play-by-play guy in the Big West for all three sports? I mean, obviously football, there's, like, 5 or 6 weekends a year where you're just gone for 3 days. Mm-hmm. Basketball, there's probably, 8 to 12 weekends, trips that aren't just down and backs in the same night. And baseball, when you talk about baseball, you're talking about 3-game series, so you're leaving on probably Thursday or Friday and getting back, sometimes late Sunday. When you have a family, what's that like?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I'm stomping, Owen.
That's why I asked.
I mean, it's hard. It's not hard on me. It's hard on my wife. I mean, my wife is a full-time first grade teacher. She puts in anywhere between 45 and 55 hours a week, and when I'm gone, she turns into a single mom. We get help from my in-laws and other family and other friends, but sometimes you got to go 2 or 3 deep on the phone tree to get some help with a ride or a babysitter or whatever else. But in terms of what it's like to travel, for me, God, when I'm in nice hotels, I'm eating buffets, I'm reading the newspaper and drinking coffee in the morning while she's up at 6:15 trying to get both my girls ready who are
making lunches.
Yeah, in elementary school, getting them ready and getting them out the door. So that's the hard part of it. And that's one of the reasons, one of several reasons why I've decided to say that's enough. Yeah. But for me, I enjoy it. I enjoy the hotels. Traveling with Chris Giovanetti, I call him my road wife, because we're roommates, and we go get coffee and do a lot of things together, and we're chit chatting, and that's the fun part. And I get to see a lot of cool places, even when we go back east or in the Midwest or in the South. But as far as what I have to endure with the phone calls, the late night phone calls from my wife and my daughters are upset. I've always said about the travel sometimes, though. It's enough travel to where my daughters don't like it and my wife does. The separation can be kind of cool sometimes.
Sure.
But overall, though, she'll be happy to have me home.
Right.
And it'll make life a little bit easier on everybody.
Yeah, hopefully, for sure. And your daughters are, like you said, elementary aged. And, I have a 2.5-year-old, and it's like I'm gone for 2 nights, and it's like, oh, my God, I'm doing, like, a FaceTime conversation or trying to talk to her on the phone, and it's like I can't even picture it being, a regular thing for as long as I know it has been for you. It's definitely something that you've, given to Cal Poly and a school that, is in the area that you grew up in and been able to be here. What's in store for Tom post-broadcasting?
Well, if you're referring to work, I don't know yet. Mm-hmm. I kind of violated one of the cardinal rules, if there is such a thing, is about letting go of one job before you have another. Mm-hmm. But with baseball being my busiest 3.5 travel months of the year, I just figured it was time to stop now. So what's coming up? I'm applying for jobs. It'd be nice to get into sales management, some kind of business opportunity.
You've done that before.
Yeah. I did it when I was working for ESPN Radio 1280. Now I'm a Learfield Sports employee. Actually, technically, I'm an independent contractor. So they would work for me, really, if you think about it that way. Don't I wish?
Yeah.
I'm looking. I'm trying to find something. It'd be nice to get something with benefits and a retirement. I know I'm 53. I've only got a handful of years left, but it's enough to at least put something in that nest egg. Uh-huh. I don't get any of that. Working what I do as an independent contractor, I get hammered on taxes. Yeah. So my family needs to make more money. For the healthy, long-term sustainability of 2 girls that are going to be going to Mission next year, and then eventually they're going to get into college, I hope. Uh-huh. And Lord knows what college is going to cost in about 8 years, Owen. So all things considered, you know, with health insurance going the way it is, I have to pay independent health insurance. I just need to make some more money.
I hear you. Yeah. And I think you know, anybody who has a brain on their heads understands that. Tell me about you know, what are you going to miss most in terms of this job and what you've been doing for the last decade? What are you going to miss most, you know, either, you know, during baseball season or next football season or at some point? What's that part that you're going to be like, man, that was really fun when we got to do this?
Or, well, in particular, it's like threefold, but number one is just being on the air. For me, being on the air is my refuge. It doesn't matter what's going on in my life. When my mom died about 3 years ago now, when my mom died, when I got on the air, it was gone. For that 2 hours, it was during basketball season. For that two and a half hours, it wasn't a part of my mindset. When I got off the air, you know, it comes back. Football, basketball, whatever problems I'm having, they go away when I'm on the air. Whatever is good in my life is enhanced when I'm on the air. I loved being on the air that much.
There's an adrenaline with it too, right?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And it's still there for you.
Absolutely. Right. You know, I don't research and I don't put the homework into the game as much as I used to, because I just want to flow on the air. I just want to get on the air and just see it and just talk and just relate it to the listener. And that's what I'll miss the most, is just that airtime. I guess it's like when you say performance, you hear actors and even athletes, you know, they can't, you know, losing that fix.
You don't get that anywhere else.
No.
I remember walking off the football field in high school going like, yep, this is not a thing that I can ever do again, because it was football and I wasn't going to play anywhere else. And it was like, okay, you know, you can't go play a pickup football game. You can't go do pickup radio. Right?
No,
I mean, like, there's no other place that you can get that kind of a fix.
I mean, I know I could do some high school games locally and things like that. And it's still principally the same thing, but it's not Division I. I don't get to see the athletes and the coaches and the players. And what a lot of people don't know, Owen, is that since I was 12 years old, this is all I've ever wanted to do. I was a young 12-year-old boy watching TV, doing play-by-play in my head. I wasn't one of those kids that, you know, did play-by-play of mom vacuuming the house or doing the gardening or anything like that. I just would think of things to say, and a lot of times the announcer would say it shortly thereafter. And at that young of age, I went, I could do that. And that's all I ever wanted to do. And that's why it's okay for me to walk away. I'll miss it like crazy. But there's a lot of people, Owen, that they don't get to live their dream job for 30 seconds.
Right.
I've done it for over 20 years. And while I'm sad and my emotions are all over the board,
sure.
I mean, there's anger, you know, there's happiness, you know, there's sadness. Yeah. But I'll walk away from this thing knowing that, you know, I got to live a life that I wanted to, you know, when I was a kid. And now, as you know, as a father, you just don't live your life for what you want to do, what our own selfish needs are. It doesn't work that way.
No, that's not reality. And I know there's a lot of Cal Poly fans that will definitely miss you. If you want to get out, you can probably still get tickets to the banquet on Friday night, the Cal Poly men's basketball banquet, where Tom is going to be honored. And hopefully, Tom, you know, I mean, it's obviously, you know, not great chance based on current record, but, you know, you never know what kind of magic could happen in an end of the year run. I know the Mustangs are going to do everything they can to get back to that tournament, and that would be a cool way to send you off.
I would love it. And in that regard, Joe Calero he uses psychology better than any coach I've seen. I put nothing past him. I think he can do it. He'll make a tweak or two, and I always think Joe's saving something. Just like he did.
Yeah. Oh, that's always my, like, that's another reason why I talk myself into them being like a dark horse again. And,
yeah.
And I say to myself, you know what, like, it's not like he's not trying to win current games, but there's some stuff that they're not doing even the second time around in conference. You know, he talked about, you know, usually the second time they've been thrown in some zone. He's like, you know, the third time around, then there's got to be something else that you got to have there. And I think maybe that's a lesson that he learned over the first couple of years here, when he had teams that were above 500 in conference, that were, you know, the Will Taylor, Amari Furman team that, you know, I look back at their record and, you know, they had a great conference. They were like 10 wins in conference. You know, other teams that did really good in conference and then struggled in the tournament. You know, all that matters is those three games to a team like this in terms of, you know, how somebody remembers that season.
No, absolutely. Joe said it. He says, I don't have to be good, you know, for my preseason games. I don't even have to be good for my conference games, because I have to be good for three games.
Yeah.
When I ask him, is this a must win? He goes, no, it's a must improve game.
Yeah, right.
And that's all he cares about.
Right. Well, Tom, you know, hopefully you do some local high school stuff. I'd love to, you know, to talk to you when you do, or if you ever need somebody to just sit next to you and and BS during the game, I'm happy to do that too. Good luck. I'm taking it upon myself to speak for, you know, Cal Poly fans across the state and across the country who depend on you for the games that they listen to and who do listen online. I know I know a number of people who are online listeners who don't just listen on ESPN Radio, and I want to say thank you for, you know, the last 10 years, you know, in terms of being able to listen to Cal Poly games and see Cal Poly games. You know, the first Cal Poly game that I saw, that I listened to when I came back, so I lived in Slo till 99 when I graduated from high school, came back here, and the first game in, I think, 2006 maybe, that I tuned in the radio for, it was 06. It was probably like fall of 06. Was a Cal Poly volleyball game that you called. It was a playoff game, I think, like a NCAA game. And I'm thinking to myself, oh man, Cal Poly broadcasts volleyball. You know, I hadn't, when I left in '99, there wasn't a sports radio station here in Slo. You know, and shortly thereafter, obviously, it got started, and Cal Poly was on the radio now. And it's like, okay, are they broadcasting all the volleyball games? I was very confused, and I didn't know if Tom Barquette was like a volleyball broadcaster, because he was doing a pretty good job, and volleyball is kind of hard, I know. I mean, I'd been around hockey guys and stuff, and that was the first game I heard you on was that volleyball game then that Cal Poly hosted in that year.
It was either Cal or Michigan, whichever one you heard, because that's who they played. Yeah. But no, volleyball's a kick. Volleyball is a kick to do on the radio, so that's odd that how your first experience was me doing
volleyball
and off sport.
Right. Yeah. One that you didn't often do. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, and good luck. Have some great calls. Your last five to ten? Who knows how many? But I'll be listening when I'm not here, and I know everybody else will too. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, thank you. Would just sum up everything. And no one does it better than you, Owen, when it comes to covering Cal Poly. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Front page.